Thank you. Yeah, I also want to start by thanking the organizer for this great meeting, and yeah, for having me here to present some of our work. So what is this talk about? So I will try to address the following question. What is the minimal design for an autonomous motor operating between two heat reservoirs? I will show you that you can engineer the optimal motor if you let you inspire by the Feynman ratchet, where you have two the system is divided in two parts which are asymmetric, and each part is immersed in a heat bath at different temperatures, and the difference. The asymmetry between these two parts and the difference in temperature can be rectified, and you can exert some work on, for example, in this cartoon on external, you can lift a mass. I will start by describing some of our result on a classical system to give you a more intuitive picture of the type of the symmetry that you need to break in order to set a thermal autonomous motor in motion. And then I will continue by describing what I call a quantum soloist, so a point mass that operates between two heat reservoirs, in contact with two heat reservoirs, and I will show that this system can break the the dynamic symmetry and exhibit some rotational motion. And I will finally, in the second part of the talk, describe again quantum duets. Probably many of you have attended current talks during the conference week. So I will just say a few words about this model, and I will focus on a similar model I've been working on. So, after many weeks in Santa Barbara, we all know that few experimental groups have engineered thermal cyclic engines operating between two heat reservoirs, and these heat engines are characterized by four strokes. You have a isothermal expansion here, and isochoric transition, isothermal compression, and isochoric and final isochoric transition. And the characteristic of this system is that the working substance is a single colloidal particle trapped in a laser tweezer. And in the group of Killiam Singer and co-workers, they have considered the quantum counterpart where the working substance is a single ion, calcium ion. This design is not autonomous. So I will continue by describing some non-autonomous design. In particular, I will focus on transport in Brownian motors. There's a very interesting paper, a review paper from Peter Ryman, where he discussed emergence of transport in Brownian classical Brownian motors. And the idea is that you need a spatially periodic system, and you need to break some spatial symmetry. And you do this by using a ratchet potential. I will discuss this in the next slide. And on top of this, you need an external time-dependent perturbation that drives the system out of equilibrium. So this, as I said, this design is not autonomous. This is the Langevin equation describing this idea of ratchet motor. So you have a mass particle in one dimension, x is its position. So it's in a potential V, which depends on some time-dependent parameter f of t, and then you have an extra parameter y of t, and eta is Gaussian white noise. So V, in order for this particle to exhibit directed motion to move, say, to the right or to the left direction, you need V to be a ratchet potential that explicitly breaks the spatial symmetry, and F and Y, they are either periodic or stochastic forces which break the thermal equilibrium. So if F is zero and Y is a correlated noise, this system is called a tilting ratchet. If Y is zero and F is a periodic function of time, you have a pulsating ratchet, which is representing this figure. So you have a bunch of Brownian particles in this ratchet potential. So F cycles between zero and minus one. So when it's zero, you have the ratchet potential. When it's minus one, you have the flat potential. And so back to the value zero. And well, you can show that this particle on average move to the right. So you have emergence of transport. Okay, well, as I said, I would like to rather consider an autonomous design, and there are a few classical examples of motors working between two heat reservoirs. One is this hard disk Brownian motor studied by Chris Vandenbroek and collaborators. So you have two mesoscopic particle with a, well, this has a shape of a triangle and this is a shape of a disk. And so they are rigid connected, they move in one dimension, and you should imagine that its coordinate is periodic. And so because of the difference in the thermal fluctuation between the two sections of the system, this object, the center of mass of, well, this is a rigid connection, as you said. So this object moves, say, in the right or in the left direction, depending on the temperature difference.
Sorry, can you go back? Sorry, this is supposed to be attached. This is like the ratchet of the system, is that right?
Well, this is, well, there's no real ratchet mechanism here. These are Brownian objects.
Okay.
And this is a rigid connection between them.
But they keep their orientation?
Well, it's one dimensional. So they move along a one dimensional track.
And then you go on a loop, is that
yeah.
right?
Okay. So they are, yeah, on periodic coordinate. Another system which is more similar to what I'm going to discuss is the Buettiger-Landau model. So it's a one-dimensional Brownian particle moving in a L-periodic force field or L-periodic potential with zero average. So on average, the potential is flat. And you have L-periodic temperature profile. So h of x is the force, t of x is the temperature profile. So you can have a region with different temperatures, so you can have a continuous profile of temperature. If you define this effective potential, u of x, well, as the integral of h over t, you can show that the particle exhibits a non-vanished velocity if this effective potential is non-periodic. So you have the integral of the ratio of two periodic function. You need this integral to be non-periodic. And, well, you can consider this as an effective entropy production in the environment. And so U of X plus L is the entropy production when you have completed a cycle of length L. Well, there's some ambiguity in the definition of heat current in the overdamped regime. So you cannot really study the stochastic thermodynamic property of the system. So, well, now I go. So these are the the models that you find in literature. So I would like to, as I said, find the minimal design for an autonomous motor working between two heat reservoirs. And I will also like to study the thermodynamic properties of this model. So if we let us inspire by Peter Riemann, so we need to break some spatial inversion symmetry, and we need to break the thermal equilibrium. Well, I start from the answer to my question, what is the minimal and optimal design for thermal motor operating between two heat reservoirs? It's made of two interacting Brownian particles at different temperature, diffusing in a shifted periodic potential. So this could be, for example, sine, and this could be cosine. And the particle one is at temperature T1, and the particle two is at temperature T2. Well, in the classical case, you can write down the Langevin equation. So V1 and V2 are the potential for the two particles, sine and cosine, for example. And then you have some interaction potential with strength K. And, well, in the classical case, you have Gaussian white noise. The two noises are non-correlated. And V1, V2, and the interaction potential, they are periodic potential. And I will assume a common period L for V1, V2, and U, although this is not necessary for what I'm going to tell you about transfer.
So the U is some interaction between...
Yeah, it's an interaction potential, which depends just on the distance. So I explicit K in front of it because I will consider the strong coupling regime. When I say strong coupling, I mean differently from many seminars in this room and the other room, I mean strong coupling between the degrees of freedom.
The temperatures
are different, yes. So you have T1 and T2. I will show that you have transport only if the temperatures are different. So, well, in the tight coupling regime, so what you do is, so you introduce, well, you can always introduce center of mass and displacement coordinates. And in the large K limit, you eliminate adiabatically the fast variable Y. And, well, you start from the original Langevin equation, you turn the crank, and you end up with the Langevin equation for the center of mass with multiplicative noise. And, well, you should keep in mind that G of X here plays the role of a position-dependent temperature. And we will see which are the consequences of this Langevin equation. Anyway, you have Langevin equation. You can write the corresponding Fokker-Planck. Yep.
Sorry. So before that, you had this I dot zero. So why do you expect that the thing, because it's like that they don't diffuse, no? I don't know. So you have these two particles that they move together.
Yeah.
And then you say, okay, that the average Y will be zero.
Yeah, when K is large.
But if it's a Brownian motion, don't you expect that they will also diffuse? I don't know what to say.
Yeah, but if you have a strong interaction between them, they will stay close together, right? And they will probably diffuse, but kind of together in a coordinate fashion.
Can you say something about why coordinate is fast?
Well, because... Well, you always when K, well, for the same reason. So when K is large, Y always readjusts to the current value of the force, right? So it readjusts quickly to a thermal fluctuation due to that. So. Well, you have a Langevin equation, you put it, well, you write the corresponding Fokker-Planck equation, and then you find the L-periodic stationary solution for the Fokker-Planck equation. So if you write this effective potential, so H is the force on the center mass coordinate, and G plays the role of a temperature, so you find that, this is the expression of the L-periodic stationary solution for the Fokker-Planck equation. And the normalization condition over the period 0L gives you the steady state current, J bar, and so the steady state velocity, V bar, for the center mass. Now, X is the center mass of the system. Okay, so, and one finds that J bar is different from zero if U of X is non-periodic. And so let me remind you, I will remind you. You have the question? Okay, cool. I will draw a parallel with Buettiger-Landauer in next slide. So if you take the leading order in 1 over k, k is large, 1 over k is small, you can expand U of X, this effective potential appearing in the solution, in a L-periodic part, and a part that contains a constant time X. So you have periodic and tilted potential. So F bar is constant force, and it's different from zero. It's proportional, it's equal, to UL minus U0 divided over L. And it's proportional to T1 minus T2 divided by K. So if the temperatures are equal, F is zero, and you have no transport, no velocity. An example is if you take two shifted potentials, so V2 is shifted with respect to V1, and these are the Fourier coefficients. So
in the discrete model, you don't have kinetic energy. The problem in the underdamped is that whenever you have these two temperatures,
a community where we like ab initio. Okay, so maybe I can continue. So I started from these duets. I was inspired by these two papers, one from Fischer and Zwerger, which is a classical in for quantum Brownian motion in a periodic potential. That's the title of the first paper. But for the formalism, I will rely on this second paper from Anselangul and co-workers, which is also called Quantum Brownian Motion in Periodic Potential, a Pedestrian Approach. So I will use the pedestrian approach here. So these guys, they studied a single particle in contact with a single heat reservoir at time t in this potential. And they calculated the average velocity of the particle. So I started from my duet system. So I write the I do it on the blackboard because I haven't published or written the a report so far. So I it's still on my notes. So this is let's see. And then I have the noise, theta 1 and theta 2. Well, this could be a set of Langevin equation. So if this is white Gaussian noise, is a classical counterpart of what I consider at the beginning with mass. And, if this has the fluctuation dissipation relation for the quantum case, then this should be understood as equation of motion in the Heisenberg picture. I will take the tight coupling regime, so I will take K large, so I will replace the cosine with the linear interaction.
Why is it good to do that if k is large?
Because you get rid of the first cosine. You get rid of the first cosine. So I have k cos q1 minus q2. Then you take, say, k large. So again, you suppress the fluctuation in the relative coordinate. And so you.
Okay.
Sorry, it was sine.
So.
Yeah. So this was the first. This is the potential.
So it's because of this same thing you said in the previous.
Yeah. So this is the potential, and then you linearize the force. I take beta xi. I take the quantum fluctuation dissipation relation for xi1 and xi2. So now I'm interested in the constant velocity, if any. So if there is a constant average velocity, this means that q dot 1 plus q dot 2, sorry, q double dot 1 plus q double dot 2, this must vanish. And the average is always the average over the back variables. So if this is the case, I average both equations here. So I end up with V bar, which is the velocity of the center of mass, which is minus 1/2 V zero eta sine Q1 plus cos Q2. And now I follow the recipe of these guys here. So I expand my variable, my dynamical variable Q1 and Q2 in powers of V0. So V0 is the amplitude of the undulation. So I write Qi as Q0i plus V0. Q1 I plus V0 square Q2 I. Good. So for and it's convenient to introduce the two variables x equal Q1 plus Q2 and big Y equal Q1 minus Q2. And then you have to solve this equation systematically at any order. So zero order, this term disappears. So you have a linear equation in the noise. So to zero order, so I solve for these two variables. This is 1/m. And y0 t is 1/n. So far, so good. And, well, I should introduce gamma, which is eta over m, and then lambda plus minus, this is gamma plus minus square root of gamma square minus 8 omega 0 square. And omega 0 square is k over m. And then I have delta, which is lambda plus minus. Okay. So, and then I have the zero order solution, which only depends on the noise. Well, and on the details of the model, the gamma and.
This is Brownian motion without potential, no?
Yeah, well, zero order. Brownian motion. Zero order, this term go away. So zero undulation. This is the solution.
No? Huh? They are still coupled.
They are still coupled through
K. In the center of mass, relative motion, they are decoupled. So this capital X and capital Y are free Brownian particles.
So capital X is a free Brownian particle. Capital Y, well, this is the relative coordinate. So here they are, if you want, this gives you the coupling.
It's a frequency,
So what is eta?
Eta is the friction. So, okay, so then you go to first order, and essentially, you get the same as here, just this is replaced by, well, in this square bracket, you have sine q0 1 tau 2 plus cos q0 2 tau 2. And why first order is the same as here up to this point where you have sine q0 1 t1 minus cosine q0 2 t1. Well, essentially, you have solved the problem because let's say we want the velocity up to the as you can imagine, the velocity will be the first non-zero term will be second order in v0 because for the symmetry v0 minus v0. If you change sine in v0, this shouldn't affect the velocity, right? You have two tracks. One is cosine, one is sine. If you change the sine of the amplitude, you are just shifting the two tracks. So you can stop to the first order because here you have an explicit bit zero. So if you want to go to second order, you have to take the first order expansion, and I will use the same notation as these guys here. First order in V0. And now, well, now the trouble, the trouble start because then you have to take the first order expansion of these terms. So let's see. It's minus 1 half V0 over eta. So you have sine Q0 1 plus V0 Q1 1. So this is my approximation. Okay. Plus costs of Q02 plus V0 Q2. This is first order particle 2. If this was a classical system, we will just expand the sign around V0 equals 0, and then we have the first order solution for Q1. Q1 is just x plus y divided by 2, and Q2 is x minus y divided by 2. And so we will have our expression for the velocity, but here, Q1 Q01 and Q11, they don't commute, so we should take the expansion carefully. And this is related to the to the Baker-Campbell-Hausdorff formula for.
But the commutator is small. Well, probably what you're doing. The commutator will be of higher order.
You have all these nested commutators. Okay. So you have sine and cosine. So say you have e to power.
This I understand. So if they were regular operators, I would agree. But because you are making a perturbative expansion.
Yeah, you want only the first term, the first order term. But still, you have all these nested commutators. So let me write the expression for just for sine of Q0 1 plus V0 Q1 1. Q1 1, first order. So they are evaluated at the same time. So I should have T here and T here. So then you have Q1 of T minus 1 over 3, 2, 0, 1. And then you have order. And then cos 0, 1. And you see you keep only the terms where Q1 appears once, but you have an infinite many. So Q1 0. This is
Q1 1. I don't know how you would continue, but I think maybe it would be easier to just use linear theory, you know.
To use?
You know this Kubo linear theory, so to expand these kind of exponentials.
Yeah, but the Q1 0 and Q1 1, they don't commute.
Yeah, but this precisely takes this into account. It doesn't commute.
Yeah.
So you get, maybe you will derive the same.
Yeah, because then term sum, so I know how to sum this series of commutators.
So you will end up with an exponential.
Yeah. I will go back. Yeah.
But just to say that some formulas that do this automatically.
And so it's called?
Yeah.
It's called how?
It's a Wilcox formula, when you differentiate exponentials.
You go through that indeed. So you have to take the differential of the derivative of the exponential of I.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what you do, and you end up with that expression.
Yes.
Yeah. Well,
but potentially you could apply it directly.
Yeah, indeed, that's what you do. But then then you have to go back to the sine and cosine and sum all the terms. And so you end up with this.
And the zero order of Q is not a C number.
So in this
expansion of QI, the zero order is not a C number. It's strange. I thought that it was sort
no, the zero order is C number. Yeah, Q.
So then this commutator.
But no, well, Q 01, the commutator Q 01, Q 01.
No,
but these two guys, the commutator between these two guys, is not
sure.
Some number. So and then I have the other term. Higher order, then you assign Q01. And you do the same for the cosine. And you notice that Q10 contains terms. Sorry, you notice that, where is that? This term here, this is x1, 1 plus y1, 1. So it contains term to the zero order in sine and the cosine, but at different times. So you will have sine q01 tau seconds multiplying cos q01 at time t. So you couple this cosine with this sine and this cosine, and this sine with the same term. So they are evaluated at different times. But so Q0i tau second, Q0j t, these are C numbers. They depend on time difference. So these are function of the time difference, and the expression depends from the fluctuation dissipation relation of the noise. So you have all this integral involving the commutator and anti-commutator of the noise. Because you start taking combination of big X, big Y, so you take you have big X, big Y. When you multiply them and take the average over the back variable, you will have terms which are commutators and terms which are anti-commutators of the two noises. But there will be function. So they will be at fixed time. They will be C numbers. Okay. And so also, when we evaluate Q0i commutator t, because for example, if we take sine Q0i tau second. So we have to evaluate this type of terms because, as I said, this sine appear, this sine and cosine, they appear here. So, well, this is trivial. This is just two. And so if you if you sum up all these terms in this integral, well, you have these terms. Then you have to replace the Q1 here and here with this, the sum of these two integrals. Then these two integrals, they contain, as I said, these terms here. So you have a bunch of commutators and anti-commutators. And so you end up, I give you the final expression. Sigma 2-1. So the only terms that will survive will be terms of the type cos or sine, because they are even in the noise. So terms like when you multiply sine with, say, a cosine, and then you average over the noise, this will give you zero. So I take cos cubed 0, 2, tosecant, cos cubed 0, 1, t, and then I have plus sigma prime 2, 1, tosecant minus t, now I have sine, 0, 2, d2, sine, 0, 1, t. And then I have an analogous term coming from big Y. And I have the same term here with a minus. And when you replace tau second with t1, so I have a minus.
Is that v0 squared?
V0 squared, yes, second one. So this square bracket is the same as this square bracket. Second. Well, okay, and then I should tell you what this. Well, the sigma ij, they come from the series of commutators, and so you can show that. So sigma plus sigma prime ij, this is E minus plus I j divided by I j sine. So, and they depend on the two times. And you do the same for the cosine. And then you want to average. So far, this is an equation for the operators. Then you want to average over the variables. So you have average here, and average here, and then average here.
What is the argument of sigma?
Sigma is tau second minus t.
Yeah, but in the formula?
Here?
Why is there no t?
Huh?
There's no t? No time?
Well, there's, yeah, well.
Yeah.
Okay.
tau is the time difference between the, the two times. And more or less, well, you have to calculate this now, the average cos 202 cos 201. This is a time cosecant, this is a sine t. Then you express the cosines and the sines in terms of the complex exponential. And you use the properties that, x is a stochastic variable with zero average and, it's Gaussian distributed with zero average. This is E. And Q0, they depend on Gaussian, not white noise. So it's Gaussian distributed, but with this quantum fluctuation dissipation relation. So this still holds. But, well, we know